Greetings and welcome to the latest edition of the Entheogenic Evolution Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Martin, and I'm happy to have you with me today for what will be probably a bit of an edgy episode for some of you out there. As I'm sure many of you are aware, Symposia, an organization which I really didn't know much about until these past couple weeks here, put out a video, a highly edited, highly distorted video of me in association with their announcement of Mark Hayden's resignation from his position within MAPS Canada, and tied it all together with the book that I helped produce for Mark Hayden, The Manual for Psychedelic Guides. And the whole thing has led me to title this podcast episode, Symposia, quote, Journalism, unquote, Weaponizing Manufactured Outrage. So today on the podcast, I'm going to be talking about all of this. First, I would like to thank Rob, who reached out to me pretty much right away after the video was produced and invited me to come back on his podcast, Adeptus Psychonautica. And we had a long 2-hour conversation about all of the issues raised by Symposia and all of the framing that they did. And probably some people here listening to this podcast have already watched that video with Rob, but I'm going to make that available here on my podcast next week because I think it's important to have a record of it here. And today, what I'm going to do is just first off address some of the concerns that were raised by Symposia. Then I have a list of questions. These are for Russell, who created the video in the first place. And then I also have a list of questions that I just have for Symposia in general, for all of them. And then I'm going to invite all of us to have an experience together here on the podcast. As you all know, I normally just talk here on the podcast, but this is a delicate, sensitive issue, so I've written down a number of things. So I'm going to do a little reading for a while for you all here, and I'm going to start with what I have titled my acknowledgments, okay? So we're going to start there. I acknowledge that my methods and techniques were radical, edgy, and unconventional by any standards, and pushing the boundaries of what might be considered ethical and proper in a therapeutic context. I worked in a radical context in which two became one, became two again, and then rinse, wash, and repeat, where any conventional notions of boundaries between self, other, me, you, subject, object, were repeatedly dissolved and then reconstituted. This was the very nature and function of my practice with clients. During the time of my practice, which ended in 2016, it was the only such available form of energetic processing, and to the best of my knowledge, was precisely why clients chose to work with me. I'll state that I have no interest in practicing in this manner at any point in the future. I retired from doing this work, and that retirement is permanent. If, for example, I were to become associated with a legal psychedelic therapy clinic, these would not be the methods employed. They were unique to the context in which I was working at the time. I acknowledge that while I did my best to be completely transparent with my clients about my methods, techniques, and provide a context in which informed consent was a priority, it could be considered to be inadequate, particularly as these issues are being discussed today. I acknowledge that my sessions with clients were a deep learning experience for me personally. Indeed, it is the experience I personally gained from my interactions with clients that served as the wealth of knowledge that I've shared openly in my talks, lectures, presentations, and most importantly, in my book, Entheogenic Liberation, Unraveling the Enigma of Non-Duality with 5-MeO-DMT Energetic Therapy, wherein all these issues of boundaries and full disclosure are covered in extensive detail. I fully support the development and implementation of psychedelic therapist training programs and the formation of professional organizations with standards for practices. It is to that aim that I was happy to work with Mark Hayden on the production of his book, Manual for Psychedelic Guides. Similarly, here in Oregon, where psilocybin therapy has been legalized and is in the process of development of professional standards and guidelines, I fully support the creation of oversight panels, professional licensing, and procedures for reporting and addressing complaints and concerns of abuse, neglect, and otherwise unprofessional conduct. Furthermore, I invite anyone who has concerns about their session or sessions with me to contact me privately. I will not divulge your information publicly, but if desired, I will speak to your specific concerns in a public format, such as here on my podcast or other available venues. I acknowledge that the widespread dissemination of the symposia video has created a challenging public discourse, including repeated ganging up on attacks on commenters by members of symposia, in which anyone with such a concern from their experience with me might feel deeply uncomfortable and intimidated to speak out publicly, which is why I wholeheartedly extend this invitation for private, confidential communication directly with me. Know that I make this offer without judgment and with a willingness to listen and give you the opportunity to be heard and respected. I would also like to acknowledge that I welcome open, honest, and ideally non-confrontational dialogue and discussion around all of these issues. I have tried my best to make myself, my views, my practices, and my experiences open and available to all who would want to know of them. I know that in doing so, I have triggered many people and also opened myself to being a target of those who'd want to disagree or disapprove. I strongly feel that these are all issues worth discussing and would like to see it done in a human-to-human way where we can all acknowledge our humanness, our desire for the best, and support of all individuals. As I reflect back on my time as a self-described non-dual energetic practitioner, I have tremendous gratitude for my clients, for their trust in me, for our time together, and all that we explored and learned together. I want you to know that you deepened my experience of reality and the possibilities of what can be achieved in deep states of openness, trust, surrender, and willingness to wade through the very real muck of being human. It is my hope that you feel that I served you with integrity, compassion, presence, and an open heart. Thank you for your work with me and allowing me to learn, grow, and explore with you. You are all very special to me and have made it possible for me to share with others the many aspects of how 5-MeO-DMT works, how people process it, and what potential it holds for humanity. Thank you for serving in this capacity. Lastly, I would also like to acknowledge that in many ways, I know that I was an easy target and low-hanging fruit for symposia for a very simple reason. I'm genuinely a radical. In many ways, I'm a perfectly ordinary person who spends most of his time doing perfectly ordinary things, being with his family, taking pictures, writing books, creating art, making music, talking to people, and just being there. But at the level of the ideas I've shared, the practices I've explored, and the ways in which I've gone about sharing them with the world, I've been a profoundly unconventional, radical, provocative, controversial revolutionary. I don't know of any other way of describing what I've put out there over the years. What I've shared deals in the biggest, deepest topics. Who and what is God? What is the nature of being? What is the very nature of reality? The ways I've addressed these questions has not been normative, conventional, or ordinary. I've had the audacity to tell humanity that each and every one of us is God, playing the role of being the individuals that we are, and that each of us has direct access to knowledge of this reality. But I've done more than that, for I've also shared what I feel in my heart in the most profound way is a genuine energetic guide and phenomenological methodology that is available and accessible to any person on this planet. And this guide can not only be experienced within the individual, but be experienced and known between individuals as well. And with sharing all this, it has been my desire to help all of us be more than what we've been and truly embrace the radical and revolutionary freedom and profound equality of being ourselves. Direct embodiments of the one universal consciousness that is everyone and everything. The manner in which I've shared all of this is simultaneously show and fully authentic. It has been my version of the reality show. Some viewers are taken in, sensing that there is something important for them here, while others have been triggered, enraged, infuriated, incensed, offended, and outraged. I haven't presented an easy picture to pin down or frame in one sitting or one viewing, or even many. I'm too complex. I've embodied what it means to live without self-imposed limits, to be oneself, and to be honest and open in all my complication. I've put it on display and explored it with others, and I will continue to do so. This very podcast episode is yet another example, an installment. So, the show goes on. And for those who would want to see it canceled, they are ultimately powerless, so they have little choice but to strike out when they see the opportunity. I have lived through other such opportunities in the past, and am living through one now. I'm certain that there will be more to come as well. I accept who I am and the role I am to play for both myself and for others. For really, it's all the same. Whether you hate me or love me, I am here. And thus, the show goes on. With all this being said, it is also my hope that Symposia is willing to acknowledge that their particular framing of these issues through the production and dissemination of their video has made the conversation profoundly more difficult, more challenging, and taken a complex situation in practice and attempted to paint it in black and white moral and ethical categories. It is my belief and opinion that they themselves have not acted in alignment with the highest of journalistic and investigative standards and need to be held accountable for intentionally weaponizing manufactured outrage. Framing, context, and transparency are important, and I feel that this serves as a case where Symposia bears at least some responsibility for the fallout of this current situation. Okay, so that's part one of what I have to say and read to all of you today. Part two has to do with Russell Hausfeld. Now, Russell works for Symposia, and Russell had actually emailed me a couple of weeks ago now with some very pointed and not so subtly aggressive questions about statements that I'd made in the LAMPS video. That's the Los Angeles Medicinal Plant Society video, which talked about extensively with Rob on Adeptus Psychonautica. And again, I'll be reposting that interview here on my podcast next week in case any of you missed it, and also just to keep a record of it over here at my own home base of the entheogenic evolution. And I answered all of Russell's questions, and I provided him with all kinds of supplementary materials. And then he released this video. He took a 2.5 hour long video, and he mixed it up with four other videos that are available of me on YouTube. And, well, this is where all the hullabaloo has come from, is from this video itself. Now, as soon as I saw this video, I immediately sent Russell an email inviting him to come on my podcast and talk about it. Days went by, and he never responded. No word from Russell. So then I wrote up a list of questions, just like Russell had sent me a list of questions, and I sent them to him. And no response from Russell. Nothing. Now, surrogates, other members of Symposia, were busy commenting on Facebook and kept returning to the, "But you said these things." Yes, I said all those things. I have never denied it. Ever. And in my view, Symposia has completely and utterly and unethically failed to take any responsibility for the fact that they are using their form of, quote, journalism to weaponize manufactured outrage. My personal opinion, the video that they made kind of seems like psychedelic revenge porn. It has the journalistic quality of something that you might see on the most abrasive Fox News segment. That's my take on it. That's my opinion. But I wanted to give Russell the opportunity to defend himself, defend his choices in making the video. Well, Russell has 100% declined. He eventually did write me back and say, "Well, we're going to be on a panel with you, so we'll talk about it then." And no, not going to come on your podcast. And I have the questions here that I sent to him. And actually, I've changed them up just slightly from what I originally sent to him. Full disclosure, everyone. There's a couple differences here. But I told him, you know, you have the opportunity. These are my questions. This is what I'm going to be addressing on my podcast. And he has no interest. So we're just going to go through the questions. I'm not going to provide any answers for these questions. I'm just going to share with you. These are my legitimate questions for Russell. So here they are. Dear Russell, what was the intended effect of the video produced by Symposia? What was the purpose? Why was the choice made to edit four separate videos into one? What purpose was served in doing so? Why was the audience not informed that four different videos were edited together? On your site, it says in your bio that you are an investigative journalist. Do you consider this video to be a product of investigative journalism? If so, how and in what way? Do you consider producing a highly edited video from unlisted sources to be of the highest professional and ethical standards as you were taught in school regarding investigative journalism? Do you feel it represents ethical conduct of investigative journalism? Is it of the highest journalistic ethical standards? Given that you've issued a re-edit of the original video, do you consider that a tacit admission of guilt and unethical behavior? Was there any consideration in production of the video of specifically informing viewers that I was discussing a practice from which I had retired? If not, why not? And if so, why not inform viewers of this? Was there any consideration in production of the video that I've published a book with a full description of my methodologies and practices? Why was it not mentioned in the video that I always discussed my practices with all potential clients before initiating any work together? You had emailed me a list of questions, and I sent you a private PDF which covered all these topics, and also sent you what was essentially a verbatim transcript of the one-hour talk I provided to all my potential clients before initiating any therapeutic work with them. Why was none of this made available in the video to fully inform viewers? Now, regarding responses to the video made by people who know and have worked with me, what did you see? What were their comments on your video? Were they in agreement and appreciation for the video and how it was made? Were there mixed reactions from this specific group of viewers? What was their sense of what it conveyed from what you saw and read? Did you have any emotional response to that? Does it raise any ethical questions for you, personally and professionally? Do you consider the edits to be manipulative at all? Were there any introduced distortions? Do you consider the edits to be distortions, such as altering my voice or introducing extreme close-ups? If no, why not? Would you consider this to be an accurate statement, altering the original for a specific effect or communicative intent is by definition a form of distortion? Is remixing the same as quoting directly or not? How would you define a remix? In your opinion, would this video qualify as a remix? What is the point of producing a remix when it comes to using other people's source materials in this specific case? Why were the edits deemed necessary or relevant? How were these choices justified in your editorial room? Can you explain your reasoning, such as why the extreme close-up on my crotch? Why slow down my voice? Why focus on me scratching my elbow? In what ways did you feel these editorial choices enhance the intended effect of the video, and what was the intended effect? Is the video an opinion piece, or is it entirely objective with no introduced changes, edits, or distortions? If you do consider it an opinion piece, then how were these opinions formed? What data and information was taken into account? Prior to the release of the video, had you received any first-hand accounts from people who worked with me? If so, what were they? When you contacted LAMPS, Los Angeles Medicinal Plant Society, about their original video and their interest in making a documentary of my practices, what did they say about their own inquiries to people who had worked with me in the past? Were they positive or negative? What was their impression of my work? Since releasing the video, have you gained access to or received any first-hand accounts of people who felt violated or abused by me directly in the context of a session with me? If so, what are they? Would you be willing to share them with me so that I might consider what they have to say? What is the mission of Symposia, and how do you feel that making this video fulfills that mission? Why did you feel that it was important to highlight the connection between Mark Hayden's book and my personal practice and work, from which I've been retired and have spoken of openly for several years? Have you read Mark Hayden's book, Manual for Psychedelic Guides? Do you feel that I contributed anything to the book that is unethical or supports violating consent or abusive behavior? Do you feel that there is anything in the book that is questionable or unethical? If so, what is it and why? Do you feel that my own work, independent of Mark Hayden and MAPS and the legal psychedelic therapy movement, is relevant for how Mark's book should be perceived, read, received, and understood? And if so, how and in what way? In what way does creating this issue of apparent guilt by association through the specifics of the article and the creation and release of the video further the aims of your organization and help it fulfill its mission? In my own responses to your email inquiries, How did you find my responses? Were they helpful? Did they provide you with any information that was not otherwise available? So, those are my questions for Russell. He has not answered them. He hasn't answered them. He's made a couple posts now on Facebook. But you know what, Russell? That don't count. You didn't email me back. You have not provided any answers here. So you had an opportunity here to speak for yourself, to defend yourself, to defend your work. You declined. So be it. Personally, Russell, this is just from me to you. You know, I saw in your bio that your degree in investigative journalism doesn't go beyond a bachelor's degree. I'm personally going to recommend, having been a university professor myself, as someone with a PhD, if you're serious about being an investigative journalist, I'm going to suggest that you go back to school. I think you've got some more to learn. I also think that this video that you've made most likely is probably going to haunt you the rest of your life in some degree or another. You bear the responsibility for this video. You bear the responsibility for weaponizing manufactured outrage. Just like I will need to live with the fact that I have fully disclosed all of my experiences and all of my practices, knowing that it'd be very difficult for people outside of that context to understand and appreciate how it worked, why it went the way that it did, and all of that. I have to live with that because people like you come along. And now you have produced a psychedelic revenge porn video, and it will be with you for the rest of your life, because we live in the internet age and none of this is ever going to go away. So best of luck with that, Russell. I hope you have a long and far more distinguished career than what you've produced here. That's my personal take on it. You can take it or leave it. Okay, now we're going to move on to the next section of today's reading. I shared the video on my Facebook page, and I said, I am fully open, honest, and transparent. I have nothing to hide. Here's the video, and it has generated many, 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 many comments. Lots of back and forth. And I was particularly impressed with one comment in particular. This was made by Jim McStay. I don't know Jim personally. We are friends on Facebook. I don't believe we've ever had a conversation. We've certainly never met each other. And he had what I considered to be the most insightful reading of the video. So I'm going to share that comment that he posted. This is from just a couple days ago now. And the language here can be a little difficult to grasp, but I'll just share this with you. This is what Jim says. The film itself is psyops, clearly driven out of agenda to malign, deliberately planting videographic devices that antagonize one's not quite conscious or tip of the tongue sensations and convictions that something's not right here. There is an acute and arguably unconscionable and morally low approach to whatever content is offered regarding the video author's conception of the Martin character. We can firmly and must necessarily separate the content of this piece, including the display of the author's version of the Martin character, from who Martin is and what Martin appears to be, quote, doing. So one side is the rubble pile, including all versions of characters, including the so-called accused actions of said characters. It is what it is. The rubbish pile grows with every spotting of twist, bend, contortion, mischaracterization, misstatement, lie, and to some extent display of emotional content regarding these matters that may betray personal shadow and bias. What refuses to rubbish is what is, and this is beyond cultural control through norms, even further beyond the control of the intra and inter-social bully of normative oughts and shoulds that fill in color and flavor in the ladle that dips into culture and moral relativism. The isness that is beyond reach of all the fingers that seek into it. The fingers of power, control, ownership, authority, ideology, cognitive conviction, rightness, wrongness, belief, law or legal assertion, muscle or mechanism of any sort. And that, what is, stands between Martin and his clients alone. That's really the limits of the discussion. If Martin wants to open these statements and expand these expressed notions of bilateral symmetry and organic organization and ego asymmetry in the context of expanding beyond and therein and then reintegration of these ego structures that define as and through and toward asymmetrical movements that twist, escape, ignore, deny, reject, then that is Martin's gift. Why you gotta check the gift horse teeth? If Martin closes the door and no past client comes forward to say abuse or foul, shame on you for shutting down the gift offering. And that will mean you are on your own to twist in the cosmic wind, and that others like myself, who are investigating the nature of reality, to at least cease from causing unnecessary pain to others, will have one less tool to melt and anneal the ego's wounds and wounding and emerge at last through with it. Me? I'm new to the conversation, but I have long endured this spiritual journey in meditation and Dharma study for decades, punctuated by psychedelic apocalypse that has reliably revealed reality to its ultimate source. I have a master's in teaching philosophical inquiry to children after a BA in Buddhist psychology from Naropa in my 20s. Not yet experience, much less practice, with 5-MeO. So ethic means essentially cause no harm. Stories in spiritual literature abound that the wages of ego are rough waters regaining sanity, but that the rough waters are always guru, always teacher, person or otherwise, leading you into the open truth. An ultimate truth is that no harm can be done or undergone or even happen, while the relative truth appears to be that folk have gut stuff, and that wretch protocol appears to be expectation in the social context, and that Martin appears not only to intend and to embody no harm, but that the insight, the intuitive application is less than action, less than one doing anything, and more apparently imminent and vital and necessary electromagnetic responsibility emergent within the biological context of the psychologically non-dual state under the pressure of latent traumas inherently seeking rest and respite. I might argue that insofar as Martin is charting a bilateral self-organization that constitutes a grace state of God and bilateral disorganization and decay as both symptom and substrate and root cause of ego, of therefore all the social and political disorder planet-wide for at least 12,000 years, Martin may or may not confirm that in some way this symmetry of God is not only intra and central at the spine, but inter and central at face-to-face in relationship with another. Who is some third party to say that no bioelectromagnetic field under the ontological and existential compulsion toward wholeness should draw one's body to lick another's heart? Society blushes, yet the command drives out of deeper and more organic substrate. This is not volition, choice, selection, election, power, control, decision, vote. This is God in dynamic biological mirror. Who are you to be outside it and throw a finger toward it? Where is your mirror? Where is the rigor and examination obviously necessary, as evidenced by the intention and achievement to produce this twist and contort, scare, psy-op, and to upon other minds and smirkily laugh about it. Gossip that harms another is always shameful behavior. Do your work to get your ego to its own ground. My take on that statement by Jim? Fucking brilliant. Marvelously insightful. Personally, when I read this comment, it might even make me cry. It so touched my heart. I read this and my reaction was, my God, he gets it. This guy really gets it. I couldn't have said it better myself, so that's why I read his comment. Fucking brilliant, Jim. So insightful. So deep. So right on the money. Holy fucking shit, Jim. You impressed the hell out of me. Thank you. Wow. All right. Let's gonna move on to the next stage of the reading process here, and then after that we'll have something a little special for everybody who's stuck around. These are questions that I have for anyone and everyone who works at Symposia. Okay, you guys ready for this? Now, of course, the original video in question from Lamps is I am discussing my experience of being a non-dual energetic practitioner offering a really quite unique form of therapy using the modality of 5-MeO-DMT. And as I'm sure anyone who listens to this podcast knows, whether you've had experience with 5-MeO-DMT or not, that it is something radical. It is not comparable to any other psychedelic. It is fundamentally unique. So, given that, I have some questions for the symposia people simply about 5-MeO-DMT. Because I think it's very relevant. Because in the talk, I'm talking about experiences with 5-MeO-DMT. So I am curious what the people at Symposia actually know about 5-MeO-DMT. I think that these are legitimate points of questioning. So, here we go. Do any of you have direct experience with either being served 5-MeO-DMT or facilitating 5-MeO-DMT for others? If you've had a 5-MeO-DMT experience, can you answer the following questions? Would you be willing to share your experiences with me? What was the context for your 5-MeO experiences? Was the work one-on-one, group, ceremonial, therapeutic? How would you describe the context? Were you given permission to film the event or bring witnesses? Was there medical staff on hand? How did you vet your facilitator? Did you feel that you could trust them with your life? What kind of information did your facilitator provide you with prior to your experience? Was there full disclosure of all possible interactions between you and the facilitator? And was the complete context disclosed prior to your session? What kinds of information did your facilitator provide you with about the medicine itself prior to your session? Do you feel that you were given full information of the wide variety of experiences that one might have of 5-MeO-DMT? Were you informed that the experience itself might potentially be traumatic and highly challenging to integrate post-session? Did you have questions for your facilitator, and were they able to answer them to your satisfaction? Did you feel there were any ethical violations in your session, or did you witness any such violations in regards to other people's experience in your presence? If so, What did you do about it? Did any of your facilitators reference me or my work to you in any way? If so, was it positive, negative, neutral? Did they recommend any of my books, interviews, or lectures to you? If so, what was your response? And did you find it helpful or not? How much time was allotted for you to have your experience? Have any of you had difficulty integrating your experiences afterwards? Have any of you had reactivations? Have any of you reached out to a psychedelic integration coach for assistance integrating your experience? If so, do you feel that they helped you, and how? What, if anything, do you feel has personally helped you integrate your experience the most? Now, if you've facilitated 5-MeO-DMT for others, can you answer the following questions? What training did you receive in learning how to facilitate 5-MeO-DMT? How would you describe that training? Was it therapeutic, ceremonial, religious, spiritual, clinical? What makes you feel that you are qualified to serve this medicine? Did you ever have any medical emergencies with your clients? And if so, how did you handle them? Did you ever feel that you were out of your depth? Have you ever been presented with a situation with a client that you felt unprepared to deal with? Are you willing to share about that and how you handled the situation? What information did you make available to potential clients prior to working with them? Did you have a screening process? Do you have medical training? If so, what? Please describe how you facilitated your sessions. What kind of feedback did you get from your clients? Were you available to your clients for follow-up care in terms of helping with integration, managing reactivations, and dealing with the profound ontological shock of a 5-MeO-DMT experience? Do you feel that you've served the medicine with integrity, full disclosure, and respect and care for all your clients? Do you feel that you might have created any potential harm for your clients? If any of your clients seek out additional information about 5-MeO-DMT post-session, where do you point them? What information do you provide? On a slightly different topic, at the moment, I only have 3 more questions for symposia. This goes out to all of you at symposia. Do you love yourself? How do you show your love for yourself? How does that make you feel? So, we now move on to the final section of this podcast episode. I now invite you, the listener, to join me on a journey into experience. And know, I love you.
Who could you be other than God? Wrapped in flesh. Nestled into human form. Holding so many possibilities in these two hands. Seeing with these two eyes the infinite
looking out upon infinity. With a quickened pulse, the heart of the fractal of universal being, forming and birthing the individual that you are. Yet merely part of the pattern. The spiraling matter of consciousness rendered perspective. Giving you every right to proclaim. I am here. So fractal that you are. Experience yourself as time. Enraptured by time. By choice. By love. These are the only illusions. Trust the real. And know the infinite as yourself. What you have always been. What you will always be.
Thank you. My love, let us share words of truth and speak of the real. You may have thought that my heart belongs to you, but this is not true. For my heart belongs to me, just as yours belongs to you. I never asked for your heart, and have not given you mine. Rather, I have opened my heart to the real, and in doing so, have come to love you. And since you have done the same, we find ourselves here, together, in love. Know that I am not here to make you happy, or to fulfill you. Those tasks belong to you. I am here to love you, encourage you, and assist you as I can. This I freely choose, for I love you. My desire is for you to be all that you are. My love is ruthless, universal, and uncompromising. This is precisely how I wish to be loved by another. For in truth, we are one. And I will be loved by another in the same way that I love myself. Know that I will share in your happiness, your joys, your sorrows, and I will share mine with you as well. But do not come to me with gifts and ploys to make me think kindly of you or earn my favoritism or pity. Come to me only with truth, and I will meet you just where you are. For my ultimate commitment is to the real, and not the games of illusion. If you hide within your mind, you will not find me there. For I live in my heart, and it is there that I will wait for you to return from the maybes and what ifs to that which is. It is from my open heart that I will mirror you and reflect back to you all that you are as a being of love, of energy, of passion, and truth. So let us be with each other in the field of love that knows no bounds and no possessions. And there, I will love you as myself. For that is what we truly are. I love you.
Beautiful it is to see you. Come, sit, rest for a while. You've come bearing your troubles, but I won't console you with words. I won't supply you with reasons or stories or tales to make sense of what you feel. Instead, know that the invitation is always open to set those troubles aside. And just be present, here and now, in this very moment that has been unfolding forever. Somewhere along the road, you chose to pick up your burdens and carry them as your duty and charge. Maybe for yourself, maybe it was for others. The reason doesn't matter. It never did. It was a choice you made. And now, as always, you are free to choose differently, if that is what you want. It's all love. Didn't you know? Every horror, every sublime pleasure, it's all the same in the infinite feel of love. When you find yourself in the prison of fear and doubt and struggle, know that you are your own guard. And the bars of that prison, they too are you. That is the price of real freedom. It is the nature of the game. You are the author of your own story, just like everyone else. So take a moment and just sit here with me. Breathe and let your breath be. No need to push. No need to pull. Just relax into your natural breath. Feel your heart exactly as it is. No reasons, no judgment. Just what is as it is. Why try so hard to fix something that is never broken? Do you love yourself enough to give permission to truly feel your heart? Do you love yourself enough to allow that which needs to be released to be let go? Your heart is big enough and strong enough. There's no need to be afraid. It might not be easy, for you've kept it imprisoned for so long. But I know you can do it, for I know the resilience of your heart and can feel it beating with mine. So come, sit, let us be together for just a while and know that it is so beautiful to see you exactly as you are.